You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening. And enjoy the show.
Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Hello there, listeners, and welcome back to Horror Hill. As always, I'm your host, Eric Peabody, and tonight's episode features a pair of stories, both of which focus on the relationships we cultivate. To begin, we'll be reading Kyle Harrison's The Lover's Locker. In this story, our protagonist Cole is a young man with a hot date. He's taking his recent girlfriend Brandy to a local escape room for a Valentine's-centric outing. The place in question is The Lover's Locker, a swanky new place that Cole's spending a pretty penny on. However, when Cole and Brandy arrive, things immediately take a turn for the bizarre, and now it's not a question of how long it will take them to escape, but if they'll even be able to at all. To close things out tonight, we have Candy Boot by Thomas O. Evan is 18 years old and has a very special friend. Candy Boot is small, prankish, and magical. He comes and goes as he pleases, can only be seen by Evan, and takes great delight in making his life more difficult. Now, as Evan is helping his mother prepare for his brother's 10th birthday party, Candy Boot has suddenly popped back up. And he has some very specific ideas about how a proper birthday should go. You're listening to the standard edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, and we can scale back some of our less savory means of generating money for the show. By the way, you wouldn't happen to still have all of your organs, would you? And now, from author Kyle Harrison, I give you The Lover's Locker. Can your love survive our lockup? Provide an unforgettable Valentine's Day for that special someone with an evening at our exclusive escape room, where love is put to the ultimate test. Call the Lover's Locker today. The place was brand new, so new that when I went in to get their brochure, I could still smell the fresh paint on the walls. It screamed extravagance, the kind of place that middle-class socialites went to on a date night. So, what was a boy from the Bronx doing here with barely a dollar to spare? Two words. Brandy Myers. We'd met only a month before on a dating site, and I wanted to make the jump from swiped right to a relationship status, and this place felt like the right spot to do that. When I texted her just days before Valentine's and asked her if she had plans, I had actually already booked us a room. According to the clerk, they were selling fast, and I didn't want to miss out. "None so far," was her response, so I sent her the tickets, and the next thing I knew, she was squealing in my ear over the phone. "Babe, I can't believe you booked us that. It looks so classy. You really shouldn't have." "Well, I figure maybe it'll finally give us a chance to really get to know one another, make a decision about our future," I told her. "Is it going to be just the two of us or a group thing? How long will it last? I want to have dinner first. Is that okay?" She had a few other questions that I couldn't answer, but I figured that we would just wing it and see where the night took us. My reservation was at 6 that evening, and I got there a little early with a bouquet of yellow roses, her favorite color. She came dressed in one of the most stunning tight outfits I've ever seen, and I wrapped my arms around her and leaned in for a kiss.
"Babe, you know how I feel about PDA. Come on, you're embarrassing me," she giggled.
She smelled the roses, and we held hands as we went inside. A small group of other couples were there, waiting eagerly to be told where they would be spending their evening. "Cole and Brandy?" a bald man called out from the front desk. I raised my hand, and we shuffled to the front of the line. "You requested the deluxe suite. Right this way," the man said. We were led to a hallway on the left and followed a dark red carpet toward a room marked DXL, where the man provided a few rules. "In case of a fire, there's an alarm on the left side of the room behind the painting, and if at any point you wish for the experience to stop, you simply need to profess your undying love for one another and we'll open the back door before the timer's through. Do you have any questions?" he asked. "What if we need to pee?" I asked, suddenly realizing that I should have done that before we got here. "Ah, yes, of course. Let me show you where the restroom's at."
"I'll wait," Brandy told me.
I went and did my business and hurried back as fast as I could, but my date wasn't in sight. Figuring she had already gone inside, I slipped out the key the man had given me before entering the room. I'm not entirely sure what I was expecting to see on the other side, but it was certainly not this. The room was covered in ultraviolet light, making every surface seem far more illuminated than normal. Rose petals were scattered across a concrete floor, and long metallic chains draped from the ceiling. The chains meshed together to form a heart, a box of some kind wedged amid the bundle, and what looked like rows of knitting needles poking toward the center table from the bottom of the box. On that table, there were several books, all of which were opened, and some had ripped pages, most of which appeared to be arranged in an arrow diagram that pointed toward the left wall. But that part of the room seemed blank. Instead, it was actually the opposite side of the wall that truly captivated my attention. Rows of one-way glass were lined up that reflected everything across the room. Except there was one distinction on the other side of the glass, and it made me gasp in shock as I realized Brandy was lying on the ground, covered with blood and petals. Immediately, I ran to the mirror, trying to bang on the glass and see if I could get her attention. Yet, instead, the next noise I heard left me in a panic. It was the sound of the door locking. Then, a voice came over the sound system. "Welcome, esteemed guests, to our deluxe suite." Immediately, I started calling for help.
"My girlfriend's injured! Get 911! I shouted as I tried to dial myself, only to soon find that cell phone reception was blocked. You'll find that we have taken the steps necessary to provide you the most immersive experience possible connected to your personal love story. The voice droned on as I scrambled to find the picture that the man had said was an emergency release. Yet, there was nothing, and the door itself had seemingly disappeared into the wall, as if hidden by another trigger. I was locked in, and Brandy was either dead or about to die. If you can unlock the mysteries of each other's heart, you can make it out a better person and a better lover. But if not, you may discover that love itself may be that which tears you apart. The recording concluded. I got down on my knees and tried again to get her attention and see if she was responsive, slamming my fist against the thick glass in frustration. I glanced up at the ceiling and realized that one of the chandeliers above the chains looked like it was a security camera, and I shouted, "Is this your idea of a sick joke, man? My girlfriend's in need of medical attention!" There wasn't a response. I went over to the table and tried to flip it in frustration, soon discovering it was bolted to the floor. And then I felt something taped to the bottom. It felt like some kind of tool. Crouching down, I realized that it was a magnifying glass, and I quickly removed its tape before staring at the mix of papers on the table. As I looked through the magnifier, I realized that some of the words on the papers were colored differently. I started to piece them together and try to form a secret message.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I felt like it was taking hours as I looked across the glass to where Brandy was laying. I had no way of being sure she was all right, but I knew time was of the essence. It felt like I was racking my brain trying to figure out the scrambled message. Then I heard the strangest noise coming from the other side of the glass. It sounded like tapping. I stopped what I was doing and went up to it, trying to pay attention to a pattern. Was it Morse code? I tried my hardest to pay attention, but I honestly didn't know a thing about it. Even as it went silent, I suddenly realized that this could be a vital clue that I had just missed. Was Brandy going to be in mortal danger, all because I couldn't solve these puzzles? I felt trapped, both literally and figuratively, and in frustration, I went back to the books. Grabbing the first one off the table, I chucked it against the wall. It fell to the floor, and a page stuck to the wall. To my surprise, it was a cipher. I grabbed it and studied the other pages again, realizing I could use it to unscramble the code. S-A-V-E was one word. Panic set in as I tried to understand the rest. Save her and save yourself, it read. Did that mean Brandy was still alive? And did it mean that I was in danger too? A moment later, the tapping returned, and I realized I might be able to figure out what that meant as well with the cipher. It was a stretch, but maybe the two were connected. As it finished, I managed to write down the one word I was sure that had been sent. Key. There was a physical key somewhere in the room. Maybe the way out of here, or something else. The question was where. I got down on the cold floor and pushed petals out of the way, trying to see if maybe the object was hidden somewhere. There were literally thousands of them covering almost every inch of space in the tiny room, but I kept sweeping them aside. Soft music began to play as I pushed more petals out of the way, and I froze when I recognized the song. It was something that Brandy and I had loved on the radio only a week or so before. How the hell did they know that? As the music kept playing and I pushed more pedals out of the way, it began to get more and more distorted, until at last it was repetitively playing the same part of the song over and over. Maybe it was another clue. I listened to the lyrics. "Never hit so hard in love." "Wrecking Ball" by Miley Cyrus. Immediately, I reached for the chains, tugging on each of them to see if one of them might collapse. The fourth one did, and at the end was, in fact, a small key connected directly to the main chain. "The box," I realized as I looked up at the intricacies of the hidden puzzle. What else about this room was part of the game? Was this really just a test and none of it real? I heard over the intercom Brandy beginning to gasp for breath, and I saw through the mirror she was beginning to convulse from the shock. "Hey, hey, I'm right here! I'll help you! Just hold on!" I shouted as I tried to get the key loose from the chain. Instead, I realized I would have to carefully pull the chain toward the box, but it still wouldn't reach. The only way would be to dislodge the box from the needles, I realized. Wrapping my hands with the ripped-up paper to protect myself, I began to push at the needles to reach the sides of the box. Even with the added layers of paper, it felt like sharp cuts directly against my wrist, and it took all of my power to not stop. Brandy's gasps were the only thing keeping me going. I knew that it was my fault she was in this mess to begin with, and I could hear her now begging for my help.
"Cole, pull the alarm! Get us out of here!"
she demanded in desperation.
"I don't know where it is! There's no portrait on my side!"
I yelled back as I finally found the strength to push the needles deep into my skin and grab the box. It tugged out rather easily, to my surprise, and I managed to unlock it only mere seconds later. I was expecting something inside to help us out of this hell, but instead, as I opened the box, the lights went completely out, preventing me from even seeing inside it. The sound was canceled too, and I couldn't hear anything from her side as I scrambled to find my phone. Surely it was somewhere on the table? I fumbled down on the ground and blindly began to search. Then I heard a roaring noise from below the table, what sounded like a growing furnace. A song by Johnny Cash filled the intercom as I felt warmth beneath my feet and panic set in again. Were they really going to burn us alive in here?
"Cole! Cole, I can't move! Help me!"
I heard Brandy scream over the song. I used the glow from the fire to make my way to the mirror and bang on the glass.
"I'm trying, babe! Just hold on!"
The flames were shooting up and melting the table from underneath, causing my makeshift footstool to reach the ceiling to collapse. And the rose petals were acting as an extra flammable material for the growing blaze, I realized as I demanded to get let out. But of course, there was no response.
"Brandy, I'm sorry about all of this. I love you,"
I admitted to her.
"Don't you fucking dare give up! I want to fucking live!"
she shouted with a whimper. I stood up, braving the inferno and reaching for the box to try and grab whatever was inside. Photographs of the two of us, driving around and making out, trying to just laugh. Had we been stalked by this business? What was all of this? Some of the photos showed either one or the other marked with black permanent marker, and then at the bottom, etched into the box, was a warning. Save yourself or save her. I had to make a choice. But how was I going to save her? I had nothing to give to her.
"Brandy, I need you to get up,"
I begged as I pushed my back against the glass wall. She couldn't see me, but I saw she was now scrambling to find a way out of her own prison.
"I don't understand what's happening, Cole. What is this?"
she whispered as I saw water was beginning to pour in from the ceiling on her side.
Look, I'm probably not going to make it, okay? I think I know what to do to make this thing stop, and I'm really sorry, I said as I covered my mouth, unable to speak.
I ran toward the blank wall and started to claw at it, anything to ruin this building. If they wanted me dead, I was going to take them down as much as possible. Instead, as I ripped the wallpaper off, I found what looked like a portrait of myself. I pulled the paper off more to reveal the rest of the painting, stunned by the details of my image. The escape switch, I thought as I pulled it off the wall, and I saw the way out was right in front of me. Then, the lingering question hit me. If I pulled it, did that mean Brandy would die? A message came over the intercom.
Congratulations! You've found your one true love. Yourself! Use the escape lever to end the simulation and rediscover your life, it said in a robotic voice. At the same time, Brandy was desperate to stay above water on the side of her prison. And if I pulled it, I imagined she would likely drown. There were probably a dozen excuses I could have used to save myself, to let her go. I didn't really know this girl. Didn't know if we were going to work out or not. Heck, after this hell, if I were her, I would definitely dump me, I thought sourly. But I told myself I had to save her instead.
The wall! Rip off the wallpaper!
I shouted to her as the flames licked against my skin. She heard me and didn't hesitate, jumping through the rising water to scratch at the different wallpaper.
Love is blind, and love cannot exist without first there being selfishness, the intercom announced as Brandy gasped for air.
You can do it! Come on!
I shouted. I saw bits and pieces of the portrait show up.
Pull the lever!
I told her desperately. Both of us were moments away from death. She turned toward me and demanded,
You do yours too! You're there too, right?
I felt a chill run down my spine as I realized she was breaking the escape room rules.
They said either one or the other. We can't both go, I insisted. Fuck it, Cole! Fuck the rules! Pull the damn lever on three! She demanded.
One. Two. The next thing I knew, I was waking up on the ground in a back alley. It felt like I'd been hit by a freight train. My clothes still smelled of fire, and I knew that it had all been true. I tried to call Brandy, but couldn't get through. I stumbled out of the alley and called a cab, getting to her house in about 10 minutes. They had dropped me off on the south side of town, with little more than the clothes on my back. I ran to her door and slammed my fist against it. She had already made it home, and looked just as shaken as I did.
Brandy, I'm so sorry about all of this, I stuttered.
Her glare told me that any chance I had at a second date was gone.
I don't know what you did to provide that place all the intimate details about my life, but you are sick. That place was a nightmare, Cole. We almost died. I didn't do anything. They must have been monitoring us, I insisted. All the more reason to not be together. I can't live like that, she argued.
You have to believe me that I didn't know this would happen, I admitted. She crossed her arms uncomfortably. There was something that she wasn't telling me.
When I went in the room, I wasn't alone, Cole. Not at first, she explained.
Someone stabbed you, right? Did you see their face?
It was you, she whispered.
The air around us felt colder as she explained.
But somehow, I knew it wasn't you. I can't explain it, but I played along. This other you gave me a warning about the escape room.
It's meant to be a representation of how our relationship will go. And if that's true, I just can't get hurt again, she admitted.
I don't understand. What you're saying isn't possible, I said, my throat feeling dry.
Is anything we experience tonight? She snapped back. Just go home, Cole. Leave me alone.
I tried to go back to the escape room today to complain to the management and maybe get some answers, but the building was already being stripped apart.
Moving on to the next town, one worker explained,
or more likely covering their tracks, I thought. I don't fully understand what we experienced or what was real about that hell. Was the escape room an illusion or a vision of my future with Brandy? For now, I can only view her from afar, wondering if the game of love I played was worth it.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You've been listening to The Lover's Locker by Kyle Harrison. And now, listeners, from author Thomas O., I present Candy Boot. If you ever asked Candy Boot to describe himself, the first thing he'd tell you is that he's devilishly handsome with an excellent sense of humor. He'd probably brag that he can speak every language known to man. He would add that he is polite, forgiving, an overall great guy. If you let him go long enough, I'm sure he'd mention that he has friends all over the world who he loves to spend time with. If you asked me to describe Candy Boot, it would be a hell of a lot closer to the truth. I'd tell you that he's about 2 feet tall with a reddish mohawk, sharp little teeth, and pointy talons. He's definitely not handsome. As for his sense of humor, some people might find him funny, as long as they're not the ones who are the butt of his pranks. The boast about speaking every language is most likely true, though his politeness exists only in spurts. And the claim about having friends all over the world? Well, he certainly has acquaintances, but I doubt that any of them would consider him a friend. Candy Boot is an imp. A sprite or a gremlin. I don't really know what his species is, but what's certain is that he's a magical prankster of the most vicious sort. At best, he's a nuisance, and at worst, well, you'll see shortly. And that leads to me, Evan. I'm one of Candy Boot's many worldwide acquaintances. He tells me that of all the people he stays with, I'm his favorite. But I suspect he says that to all of his friends. His modus operandi is to jump from location to location, usually staying for no more than 2 weeks at a time in any one spot. If you're lucky, and if you catch him in the right mood, he can actually be very interesting and chatty. He's the reason I can swear in 15 languages. I didn't choose to be one of his acquaintances. I want to make that much clear. He just showed up one day, telling me that I was to be congratulated on becoming his newest friend. That was 10 years ago, when I was 8. It was terrifying the first time I saw him, but I won't go too much into that first meeting now. That story is best saved for another time. I don't know why he picked me to be one of his hosts, and he never gives me a fixed response when I ask him. Once, he told me that it was because he heard me playing Bloody Mary in the bathroom one day.
"You called to me," he explained.
I tried to argue that he was neither bloody nor named Mary. He just laughed.
After a while, his answers became more and more ridiculous, so I stopped putting too much thought into the reason for our relationship. The only thing that makes him somewhat tolerable is the shortness of his visits. He poofs in with a little cloud of smoke, stays 2 weeks or less, and then he's gone again, off to other corners of the world for months at a time. I suppose there's some unfortunate kid in China who has the same candy boot problem that I have. I don't know how many friends he has, but I'm glad he spreads himself around. By the way, when he's here, he only shows himself to me. When I was younger, I had a hell of a time trying to convince my mother that a little imp had been spending the past few nights sleeping on a pile of my dirty underwear. I finally gave up on that since he can go invisible at a moment's notice. In the end, it was easier to simply accept his presence and shut up. He operates within some set of guidelines that I don't completely understand, scoring non-existent points when he pulls off a successful prank.
10 points to me, he said after magically changing my completed homework into a multi-page love note to my 60-year-old teacher. I actually turned it in, thinking it was still my report on the Civil War. What followed was probably the most embarrassing parent-student-teacher conference ever. Another time, he woke me up by giving me a decidedly non-magical atomic wedgie.
5 points!
He huffed and puffed as he tried to pull my underwear over the back of my head.
Points to me,
he said triumphantly as he finally succeeded. For the most part, though, he just skulks around, mumbling to himself and getting into things. I try to ignore him, but it's hard when you're studying and you see him out of the corner of your eye using your toothbrush to style his nose hair. I could go on and on about life with Candy Boot, but it's easiest to just say that you get used to having him around. And, as I already alluded to, sometimes he's not even that bad. If you ask nicely, he'll tell you all sorts of interesting stories about his brothers. He has 50 of them. So, that's how it is with Candy Boot. Him popping in unannounced and uninvited, playing practical jokes, acting like a jackass, and then leaving. Rinse, repeat. If you don't count Candy Boot, and please don't, our household consists of me, my mother, and my little brother, Kyle. Around this time last year, we were busy planning a party for my brother's 10th birthday. Candy Boot had been out of the picture for several months at that point, and I prayed that he'd still be gone, at least until the party passed. As far as my little brother was concerned, I have to say, the little guy had really earned himself a big bash. For a long time, he'd been a bit of a pistol. It probably had something to do with my dad leaving. However, he'd gotten his grades up, and the teacher was no longer sending home conduct reports, so my mom and I wanted to reward him. The party was going to be really kick-ass, with tons of people, a huge cake, a piñata, a bounce castle, and Pickles the Clown. It was the night before the party when Candy Boot returned. I have a sneaking suspicion that he knew about it all along, but he acted as if he had no clue what was going on.
"What's this?"
he demanded in his croaky voice only moments after magically appearing right next to me. I saw he was pointing at a papier-mâché horse. "Hello, Candy Boot," I said with a sigh. "It's a piñata. I can't believe you don't know what it is."
"Sé exactamente lo que es, idiota,"
came the hoarse reply. "Then why did you ask me what..." "You know, never mind." Candy Boot let out a cackle to let me know he was pleased with himself. He opened the box that held the cake.
"What flavor is this?"
he asked, as his dirty little talons skimmed some frosting off the top.
"Get away from that!"
I shouted as I shooed him away. He gave an excited chuckle and jumped up from the counter onto one of the rotating blades of the ceiling fan.
"You can't have any,"
I added as I closed the box back up. Candy Boot slowly licked the frosting that was still stuck to his talon.
Sweet, he commented. We're going to have a good time tomorrow.
Yes, that's right, I said. We, as in me, my mom, my brother, and all our guests. That doesn't include you. I spoke as if I could actually control Candy Boot. I was praying that just once he'd sense that something was important to me and just leave it alone. Candy Boot didn't acknowledge his uninvitation.
It's getting late, he said. And anyway, I just came from Sweden. Jagtilbrigande bara hela dagen javlet för.
He yawned, exposing his dirty little teeth to all the world, then clapped his hands and disappeared in a cloud of smoke. Moments later, I could hear a tiny snore emanating from my bedroom. I checked one last time on all the supplies. The decorations were already hung up, and they looked great. I checked my email for the 10th time to make sure the catering was confirmed for the correct date. It was. I walked into my bedroom, where I saw Candy Boot laying across my bed, slowly humping my pillow in his sleep. I shook my head and pulled a spare blanket out of my closet. Then I laid myself on the floor and took way too long to fall asleep. The next morning, I was woken by the sounds of the household. Kyle was talking excitedly, and my mother was setting up tables and chairs. Candy Boot was nowhere to be found, though I knew he had to be close. I got dressed and joined my family as they set up. We were expecting about 70 guests, nearly all of Kyle's classmates and a bunch of our neighbors and friends. The morning hours zipped by, and soon people began arriving. Pickles the Clown showed up and entertained the kids with magic. The younger crowd had fun in the bounce castle, while the adults looked on in joy. It seemed that everyone was having a great time. About an hour into the party, Candy Boot made his reappearance. I'd spilled a little soda on my shirt and stepped into my bedroom to change.
How's it going out there?
The gruff voice asked from behind me. I didn't even bother to turn around. It's going great. Let's keep it that way.
How old is this brother of yours?
I wanted to ignore him, but I knew it was never wise to ignore the ignoble imp. He's turning 10 today. Candy Boot stroked the few small beard hairs that drooped from his chin.
I never really liked him.
Kyle, you don't even know him.
I know him well enough, he shot back. He's a bully. He hurts the other kids.
He was acting out when my dad left, I responded. But he's totally different now. That's why we're doing this for him. I could have said more, but I knew it would be a waste of time to point out the irony of Candy Boot being offended by a bully. If you'll excuse me, I need to get back out there, I said as I high-stepped over Candy Boot.
It's my birthday too, you know, Candy Boot said.
I paused before reaching the door. I didn't realize you had an actual birth. I thought you just spawned out of a magical pile of garbage somewhere. It was a risky move to insult him, but the words felt good spilling from my mouth.
My mother would be very unhappy to hear you say that, but I'm sure she'd forgive you if you threw me a party too.
Okay. I paused, exasperated. I'll do something for you tomorrow.
It's not my birthday tomorrow.
It's probably not even really your birthday today, I argued.
Yes, it is. And if that bully is getting a party, I want one too. Right now.
You want me to throw a party in this bedroom with just you and me while the real party's going on out there? Candy Boot nodded his pointy gray head up and down. I can't do that, Candy Boot. I have to help my mom run things out there. I opened the door and took a step into the hallway.
Don't leave, he said slowly.
I took another step out the door, determined not to be pushed around. His voice lowered.
Don't you think you can insult my mother and then simply walk away? You'll regret it.
I'm not going to let you push me around, I said. Standing tall, I walked out of the room, proud of my own determination. But then, before I could close the door behind me, I heard his little bony hands clap together two times. Magic. He'd just done something magical. I stepped back inside and closed the door, expecting to find Candy Boot grinning and laughing to himself at whatever prank he just pulled. What I saw was much more concerning. Candy Boot looked completely spent. Instead of his healthy gray patina, his skin was almost completely white. His eyes drooped, he was breathing heavily, and his dog-like ears pointed toward the ground. What you have to know about Candy Boot is that whenever he performs magic, it always takes a physical toll on him. The greater the magic, the bigger the toll. I'd never seen him look so bad. Whatever he had just done, it was something big. I stomped over to him. "What did you just do?" I demanded. A chuckle, interrupted by a cough, was his only response. In anger, I grabbed his bony little arm and pulled him to me. "Tell me!" Despite his drained state, he responded in inhumanly quick fashion. His free arm lashed out and slashed me directly below my elbow, his claws tearing deeply into my skin. I released my grip on him and screamed out in pain. Candy Boot's face was in a snarl. I must have had a look of absolute fear on my own face. His eyes shifted to my bleeding arm, and his snarl slowly dissipated. Blood ran down to my fingers and dripped onto the carpet. I could only stare at him in shock. Nothing like that had ever happened between the two of us. Without a word, he clapped his hands together twice, and I felt a jolt go through my injured arm. When I looked down, I saw that the bleeding had stopped, and scabs had begun to form over the cuts. It wasn't completely healed, but it was no longer a serious injury. At that point, Candy Boot was completely wiped out. He fell over backwards and landed with a dusty little thud. Then, while making little grunting noises, he rolled over and crawled to my closet. The door was ajar, and with the last bit of energy, he pulled it open and climbed up a pile of my dirty laundry.
"Spero vi paciano glinsetti,"
he said to me with the last of his wakefulness.
"It's going to be sweet. 1,000 points to Candy Boot."
He gave a weak chuckle as he shaped a pair of my underwear into a tiny pillow. Then he passed out. His little snores echoed around my room. I took off my t-shirt and put on a long-sleeve shirt in its place. The sounds coming from the rest of the house indicated that everyone was still having a good time. Candy Boot's prank, whatever it was, hadn't been unleashed yet. I stepped out into the hallway and looked around. There was Aunt Chloe with a soda in her hand. The neighbors were eating some pizza. Children were running around laughing. Pickles the clown was juggling some balls for the amusement of the smaller kids. Nothing seemed amiss. I cautiously walked around, examining every corner and nook. I thought back to the last thing he said to me. "It's going to be sweet." It was a clue. Sweet. Like cake, maybe. I turned around and looked at the birthday cake. It was a huge single-layer sheet, big enough so that everyone could have a piece. I have to say, it was a visual masterpiece of colorful icing and decoration. As far as I could tell, it was untouched, but Candy Boot's magic wouldn't have left any outward signs. I ran through scenarios in my mind, envisioning that everyone who ate it would be cursed immediately with explosive diarrhea, which is exactly the kind of thing that Candy Boot would find funny. There wasn't really time to think of a good plan, but I knew I had to get rid of it before it came time to serve it.
"Hey, Mom!" I shouted across the table. "Don't you think we should have the cake on the other table?"
I pointed over to the card table that had been set up in the living room. My mother looked confused.
What? No, leave it where it is. No, Mom, I think more people can enjoy looking at it if I move it over there.
With some effort, I picked up the cake and started walking. My mom's exasperated voice carried over the sounds of the party.
Just leave it! Be careful! Be careful!
As my mom spoke her final warning, I feigned a stumble and dropped the cake to the floor. For good measure, I fell forward and landed on top of it. The party became eerily silent. 70 people, all looking at me with their jaws agape. Heck, even Pickles looked upset, which, if you can imagine, was especially difficult with his painted-on smile. I rolled myself off of the cake, further flattening it and removing any hope that it could be salvaged. Tiny bits of frosting had made their way into my mouth. They tasted delicious, but I had no choice but to spit them out.
Heaven!
My mom yelled as she stormed up to me.
What were you thinking?
I apologized, and then apologized 4 more times, but my mom barely paid attention.
Kyle, go grab some cleaning supplies,
she said to my brother as she pointed under the kitchen sink.
Chloe, can you help me with this?
She asked my aunt. She turned to the children, who had gathered around to witness the idiot who had dropped the cake.
Why don't you kids go start the piñata? There's still more pizza, everyone.
With my mom taking charge, the party started coming back to life. I looked like a fool, but secretly, I considered myself a hero. My mother instructed me to go buy another cake, which I readily agreed to. With frosting and cake all over my shirt, I returned to my bedroom to change yet again. Candy Boot was still passed out in the closet. I thought about giving him a good swift kick, but then I thought better of it. I put on a clean shirt and returned to the festivities, where my mom handed me some cash.
Get enough for everyone,
she said tersely.
Don't take too long.
I walked through the living room to where the last few remnants of cake were being cleaned up by a few of my relatives. The cake, though smashed, didn't look as though it had been affected by any magic. My Aunt Chloe got some frosting on her fingers, and I watched as she absent-mindedly licked it off. It seemed to have no effect on her, and I suddenly didn't feel very confident that the cake was the center of Candy Boot's plan. Sweet, I repeated to myself. What else at the party was sweet? Everything seemed to move in slow motion as I looked around the room, taking in all the sights. Looking into the den, I could see a large space had been cleared out. The piñata had been strung up over one of the exposed beams along the vaulted ceiling. My Uncle Joe was manipulating it, moving it up and down as a hapless small child took a swing at it with a bat. The child took one final swing before my brother Kyle stepped up and took a turn. He put the blindfold on, but even from across the room, I could see he didn't really pull it all the way over his eyes. Cheater. As my uncle pulled on the rope to move it up, I saw the piñata momentarily bulge along its midsection, as if something inside of it was pushing out. I screamed at Kyle to stop, but he either didn't hear me or didn't care. He stepped into his swing, like he'd been taught in Little League, and nailed that damn piñata square in the middle. A large crunching sound erupted as the paper horse split open. Children, with their greedy little hands stretched out, pushed forward in anticipation of the sweets about to pour forth. At first, I couldn't tell what it was that came spilling out of the piñata. For a half second, it looked like a single black, pulsating blob that came falling to the floor. But as it descended, it began to spread out, and its individual elements became identifiable. Spiders, cockroaches, centipedes, all sorts of creepy things, thousands of them. They hit the ground and immediately spread out like a ton of marbles rolling away from each other. The children closest to the scene saw exactly what was happening, but as they tried to escape, they were pushed even closer by the clueless children behind them. This continued for a few seconds, until it became clear to everyone that there were no sweets to be had. Soon, they all pushed back, trying to leave the scrum that had formed around the busted piñata. Screams moved through the room as the bugs began crawling up the legs of the partygoers. I could hear my Uncle Joe cuss and yell out, "Oh my God!" as he fell down. Several roaches crawled over his face. The chaos spread as the disgusting bugs and panicked children fled from the den into the other rooms of the house. Pickles, the clown, tried to maintain a sense of calmness. "Slow down, everyone," he said in a surprisingly calm voice. The kids paid no attention and trampled over him in their haste to exit the house. All I could see of him were his hands and legs shooting into the air as the kids stepped on his torso. A handful of the partygoers rolled on the ground in an attempt to squash the bugs that had crawled into their clothing, though this had the unintended consequence of allowing even more bugs access to their internal compartments. A teenage girl tried to dive through a closed window in an attempt to get away, but she nearly knocked herself unconscious when the unyielding window proved to be a hell of a lot stronger than she anticipated. Bugs overran her as she sprawled out on the floor. People tripped, fell, and pushed each other. I somehow managed to avoid being knocked down. Soon, the house was empty of people, with the exception of me, Pickles, and a couple of others. Pickles moaned as he rolled over from his back and got onto his hands and knees. Somehow, in the melee, he'd swallowed his red foam nose, which he vomited up with a retching sound as bugs continued to run by him. Outside, people were stripping their clothes off and shaking out the bugs. The moaning sounds of the fallen were punctuated by the hiss of a Madagascar cockroach that crawled up on the table behind me. I surveyed the scene, and as far as I could tell, nobody was seriously injured. People had bumps, bruises, and cuts, things that would heal in relatively quick fashion. The psychological damages? Those wouldn't heal for a long time, if ever. From my location, I could look down the hallway to my bedroom. The door opened slowly, and I made eye contact with Candy Boot as he poked his head out. He gave a big smile as a wallet-sized spider walked past him and into my room. In his left hand, he held the shirt I'd been wearing when I fell on the cake. He licked some frosting off of it, then he raised it up and nodded to me as if he was making a toast. I nodded back to him, thoroughly defeated. "Happy birthday, you little fucker," I thought. Candy Boot dropped the shirt and made a thumbs-up motion. Then he clapped his hands together and disappeared, leaving a little puff of smoke in his wake. He was gone, off to some other part of the world to spread his miserable little brand of humor. At least his visit had been a short one. I did a little dance step to avoid a potato bug that had crawled up to me. As I brought my heel down on its body, I imagined that it was Candy Boot. The crunching sound made me feel a little better. With that, I went over and helped Pickles up from his hands and knees, and together we went outside, away from the mess that Candy Boot had created. You've been listening to Candy Boot by Thomas O. Nothing like some bedlam at a family birthday party. I'd be lying if I said that it really requires a magical imp to turn a family event into chaos, but it certainly does help. Still, I suppose Candy Boot's better than that creepy little fucker trying to steal Drew Barrymore's breath and Cat's Eye. Am I showing my age now, friends? Thank you all for tuning in tonight, and of course, extra thanks go to Kyle Harrison and Thomas O. for their literary contributions. As always, I'll be back next week for your regular dose of scary stories. After all, you need something to cool you down during the summer, and a nice chill up your spine should do the job quite nicely. Until then, my friends,
stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted and narrated by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Original music provided by Eric Peabody and Nikki McSorley. Finalization by Eric Peabody and Craig Groshek. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at natalie@chillingtalesfordarknights.com to have your work considered for future production. Seeing as how we're all living in a technological nightmare of our own devising, I'll ask you to follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. Not only will you have appeased the dark gods of cyberspace, but you'll be kept in the loop as we prepare more terrifying content. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend becoming a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Otis Gyre's Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, Paul J. McSorley's Fear from the Heartland, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. As for me personally, I'm on most social media as Viking Guitar or Viking Guitar Productions. I'm always on the lookout for new stories to narrate and new music projects to mix or master. If that's of interest to you, feel free to reach out and we can talk turkey. Also, I will be back next week with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.